two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Since the first coronavirus case was discovered in the U.S., over 3,000 attacks on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have been reported, and many of these have targeted the Bay Area's elderly. There's been so much misinformation and fear that have fueled this uptick in violence and hate crimes against the AAPI community, partially because of COVID's origins in China. But let's not forget that former President Trump also encouraged these attacks with his racist rhetoric against Asian Americans.
COVID-19, that name gets further and further away from China as opposed to calling it the Chinese virus.
It's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China. That's why. It comes from China. I want to be accurate.
Robberies, denial of customer service, and even fatal beatings are all things that have happened to AAPI communities as a direct result of dangerous scapegoating and bigotry. The Bay Area Civil Rights Group, Stop Asian American and Pacific Islander Hate, was created in March to collect self-reported data on these verbal and physical attacks. And this week, we speak to its founder. Cynthia Choi, who also leads Chinese for Affirmative Action, joins us to talk about Stop AAPI's data collection, the roots of anti-Asian American sentiment in our country, and why an intersectional community approach is necessary when tackling structural racism. This is Our America. I'm your host, Julian Castro. Cynthia, thank you so much for joining me. Since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, there has been a huge uptick in the number of anti-Asian American and Pacific Islander hate crimes. Could you tell me, you know, what this has meant to you personally, for your family, for the community that you live in?
You know, I rarely get asked that question. I'm often asked from a policy, from a data perspective. And I will have to answer that by saying that personally, it's been really hard. And also, this isn't something that's new. Certainly, the pandemic has led to unprecedented levels of hate incidents. And, you know, something that I haven't seen in my lifetime. But I think it's really important to recognize that anti-Asian racism and violence, even through our legal system, is not new to our community and many communities of color. Early on, when we started Stop AAPI Hate, I was reading every single incident. People who had firsthand accounts, people who witnessed or heard from their elderly parents what had happened to them. And it's shocking. I never want to be numb to these types of stories. And it has been really hard. It's been hard on my children, who I learned could hear me doing interviews and assisting individuals in talking about this issue. And certainly through our local work, we have been doing everything we can to address attacks against our elderly, which has made national and international news.
Shocking new video released by Oakland's Chinatown Chamber of Commerce shows yet another man knocked to the ground in broad daylight. Just one of more than 20 assaults and robberies they've documented in the neighborhood.
An 84-year-old man has died after a horrific daytime attack in San Francisco's Anza Vista neighborhood.
There is news tonight about the growing incidents of racist and often violent attacks against Asian Americans in this country. More than 2,800 reports since the pandemic began.
the community in Oakland.
Take me back to those first days for you to start the organization and see a need for it less than a week after everything shut down. What was happening? Just walk me through that you saw an immediate, urgent need to start this organization.
I remember very vividly when we started to see news accounts of Asian Americans being attacked, the discrimination, the vitriol, and even the media was referring to COVID-19 as the Wuhan virus. And so we knew very quickly that things were going to get bad fast. We came together and said, we've got to start documenting this. And we were shocked. We were shocked. And to this date, we have over 3,000 incidents. And we know that people are underreporting too. And we know that one of the reasons why we started this center was because there has been a deep distrust of government and reporting to law enforcement for a variety of reasons. And so we believe that as trusted organizations, people came onto our site and they came on to say, I want to be a part of this collective voice to say, this happened to me, this happened to my family. They wanted to say, Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, we are also part of this racial reckoning that we're having in this country. And I think that's what's really important. And some of the outrage that you're seeing from the API community right now is because of the sense that we have been invisible and unheard. And I'm very inspired by the fact that we are coming together and finding ways to challenge the system that has oppressed and invisibilized our communities for so long.
And in addition to being such a great organizer, you're also a mom. When you reflect on the opportunities for the next generation and your own children, what do you see in terms of the progress and the challenges?
I am a mom of three daughters, ages 22 to 11. And it's been incredible. I mean, one of the silver linings of being in a pandemic is a lot of togetherness. And so we have multiple conversations about this time that we're in, this pandemic, the fears, this racial reckoning. I'm one of those parents that made my children watch the PBS series on Asian Americans because I wanted them to know that history, and I wanted them to know that, yes, horrible things happened to us, but we also fought back, and that made America stronger and what it is today. And we need to continue to do that. You know, I have lots of conversations with my youngest in particular, who is now at the age where she's learning about Japanese internment, about really dark periods in our history. You know, one of the questions that she always asks me is like, well, how does this happen? How do you round up 120,000 people and put them in concentration camps? And so it's a great opportunity to talk about, well, it's political rhetoric, it's racist rhetoric. It makes people scared of other people, people that they might not know. It becomes the way to rationalize policies that are even more harmful. But that's why we need to stand together. And there are more of us who believe in the good, who believe that we can be a part of this multiracial democracy, and we will.
Could you tell me a little bit about your story, your family story?
Well, I rarely get asked that question too, Julian. Well, my story is not unlike many stories, which is I'm a daughter of Korean immigrants who came here to seek a better life. My father came as a student. My mother came here when she was very young and quickly started a family of three. and struggled to make ends meet and to learn English and to really create, you know, a better life for us. And I think that experience, those stories, those memories really guide me today in terms of how challenging it is for recent immigrants to navigate, you know, different systems, including the education system. One story that I wanted to share was that my brother had a learning disability and was not getting the attention that he deserved. And they actually sequestered him in a room with children who they didn't know what to do with, who had learning disabilities or couldn't speak English. And my parents, who didn't speak any English or not very well, fought for my brother and said he can be in a classroom and he needs to be taught in a classroom. And when I think about that story, that courage, I think I have that fight in me because of my parents, because you had to stand up for yourself. And so, you know, that story is very vivid. And also the story of when my family moved into a predominantly white neighborhood, and the way that we were welcomed was our home was vandalized. No other home on that street was vandalized. And I remember my father and mother saying that it's because we're Asian. And as a young child, that really stood out to me. I might have not completely understood it, but it made me scared. It made me fearful. And it certainly made my parents very worried. And so those experiences shaped me and why I've been a part of, you know, the movement for change. And I think it's certainly been a source of inspiration to be reminded of that.
This surge of hate incidents that we've seen against the AAPI community, particularly since the pandemic started, but as you said, I mean, racism, bigotry toward the AAPI community goes back as long as our nation has been around. If we think about the Chinese Exclusion Act or the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. But since this pandemic started, and we had at the time a president that was fueling this attitude, talking about the China virus instead of the coronavirus, could you just give me a paint a picture of some of the things that you've heard and seen out there from people? What's happening in the AAPI community?
Yeah, Julian, the thing that I am struck by most is that when we started Stop AAPI Hate with our partners in March of last year, hundreds of individuals came onto our site and told us horrific stories of what they encountered. Largely verbal harassment and attacks while they're at the grocery stores, while they're in public places, and the discrimination that folks encountered in the workplace, refusal of service, a number of hate crimes. You've also seen some cases that have made headlines, like the Burmese family in Midland, Texas, who was stabbed by a person who said that they had the coronavirus. So this is very, very serious. And one of the things that I think it's important to recognize is that the former president was an accelerator of hate. We saw from these incidents reports of people saying that Trump's name was evoked. And so we do see a direct correlation of that type of rhetoric, and including this overall anti-immigrant climate under this past administration. And it wasn't just dehumanizing, it endangered the lives of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders.
Hi, Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Welcome to The Dough, where Cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, Season 2 is here. Hosted every week by me, X Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season 2 of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You talked about some of the misperceptions of the AAPI community. How have those impacted the community or parts of the community over this last year during the pandemic?
Well, I think it's really important that I name that this education has had to happen even within our own community. You know, my parents and so many of our elders, you know, told us from a very young age, work hard, study hard, don't make any noise, keep your eyes on educational attainment and taking care of your families, don't become politically involved. And we are seeing a generation of Asian Americans who are really challenging that and saying that we have to be civically engaged, and we have been. And so that work is really important within our community, as well as educating others that this model minority myth was a fabrication. It was a lie concocted to create a wedge between Asian Americans and other communities of color, to deny that structural racism exists, to deny that we have a history of racism, to, you know, promulgate falsehoods around some communities, some groups being culturally inferior, intellectually inferior. And Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, we are wholeheartedly rejecting that. And we have to lift up the fact that our communities are so diverse. Look, we're facing a crisis where our Southeast Asian brothers and sisters are being deported at astronomical levels. We are seeing food insecurity, housing, the unemployment crisis, and Asian American-owned businesses being disproportionately impacted by COVID. So we have to look at systemic levels of change, and this is what's going to get us through this pandemic and long after, because this recovery is going to take a long time, and it's going to require all of us to look at systemic levels of change that need to occur.
Right now, we're in February of 2021. It's been almost a year since you founded the organization. What's been your major takeaway from it so far?
It's a reminder of our conditional status in America. It's a reminder that we have to continue to fight against bias and stereotypes, such as the model minority myth. It's a reminder that what's going to keep us safe is our community, our movement, our recognition that we need to work together across communities. And we also have to reject any attempts to pit our communities against each other. And we also have to reject this notion that we need to rely on institutions that have harmed our communities and an over-reliance on law enforcement approaches. What we do need is resources investments in community-based organizations that are closest to the ground. We need resources to do the education, to support survivors and their families, and to really pursue efforts that really address the root causes and drivers of violence and crime and discrimination in our country. Ultimately, we believe that's what's going to keep our community safe.
With the organizations that you've been leading, Stop AAPI Hate and Chinese for Affirmative Action, what are your goals? What would you like to see?
Well, CAA and Stop AAPI Hate, we have shared goals in the sense that, you know, we not only set out to document the anti-Asian racism, but we really wanted to analyze and better understand what was happening, who it was happening to, where, you know, the location, you know, what types of incidents, so we can develop responses. It makes us really evaluate the fact that strategies that focus on law enforcement may not be the way to go. In fact, what we're seeing and what we're really questioning is, you know, should we instead really focus on education, the resources to do better in terms of what survivors need and their families, the mental health crisis that our community is facing as a result of the pandemic, but also the anti-Asian racism has skyrocketed. But where we think that most of the investments should be made is around prevention efforts. Because of course, it's not just the victim or survivor and their immediate family that's hurt. Violence affects all of us. People's sense of personal safety has been compromised. That's such a fundamental right as a human being. But we also are working at a policy level. You know, we are looking at the question of whether hate crimes legislation has been effective. How do you get at the underlying causes of racial bias? And so that's why we're pointing towards and really investing in community-based efforts that really focus on restoration, public education. And of course, we have to address the immediate harm, because unless we can protect our elders and our most vulnerable community members, we can't even get to those other conversations.
You've been organizing the AAPI community for years successfully. You mentioned the diversity of the community. When it comes to the Latino, Latina community, people often lump it all together. And whether it was in November's election after the results or many times before that, one of the pushbacks from a lot of Latinas and Latinos has been, hey, you know, there's a diversity here. It's not monolithic. People have probably heard that phrase a million times since November. But when we think about the AAPI community, that's even more true. People coming from an even more broader array of original national origin, or if they grew up here in the United States, as many have, same thing, different backgrounds, different languages. How do you see that when it comes to organizing the community against anti-AAPI hate and going forward to ensure there's greater prosperity and equality for the community?
Such a great question, and I think it's so important. The AAPI community is very diverse socioeconomically. Our histories, our migration stories, the language diversity, cultural diversity, and geopolitics, right? I mean, if you look at relations globally, there is a tremendous amount of history and conflict, and that all plays out here in the United States. Even within the Chinese community, the difference between those who are from Hong Kong or the mainland, and I think that's really important to lift up in the sense that we do need community-based organizations who understand these communities, who work in these communities, are from these communities, to be a part of addressing these solutions that are specific to their communities. But the one thing that the surge in anti-Asian racism has reminded all of us is it doesn't matter. We are all subjected to that discrimination. You know, when Vincent Chin was beaten to death, they thought he was Japanese. The Burmese family that was attacked, they thought they were Chinese. And also, you know, we have to do a better job of being inclusive of the Pacific Islander community. Their needs are entirely different as well. And so I'm reminded over and over again, never about us, you know, without us, right? So they need to be part of the conversation and not an afterthought. So there's a lot of work in terms of bringing our communities together, overcoming some of those historical challenges and barriers. But this has been a moment to mobilize us and to come together to fight anti-Asian racism.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
We just changed administrations. And with that change, early in the Biden administration, they put out a memorandum condemning anti-AAPI hate. But we still have almost 4 years left of this term of the Biden administration. What do you hope to see out of this administration when it comes to the well-being of the AAPI community and forging a better country for everybody?
Well, what a world of difference to have the president, our national leader, actually recognize 400 years of structural racism and to disavow anti-Asian racism. And while I think it was a very, very good step to actually direct and mandate federal agencies to remove racist rhetoric, but we know that there needs to be more work done. Much of this work in terms of addressing anti-Asian racism, discrimination, does need to happen at the local level. But the federal government can do a lot in terms of providing guidance by dedicating resources, by supporting community organizations that are on the front lines leading this work. You know, there's that saying that when America sneezes, right, the rest of the world catches a cold. I think that it's really important that the United States leads in terms of addressing all forms of racism, that we can be looked at as a model for how you advance a multiracial democracy.
You live in California, and if there's a place in our nation where multiracial coalitions have been built and have had success in producing better policy, progressive outcomes at the ballot box, you know, California is it. What perspective and advice would you give to other places, other communities, where perhaps the AAPI community is just emerging there, is growing? What do other communities need to know to build those kinds of coalitions?
Julian, we do have tremendous diversity in California, and it's been an asset because we're able to mobilize our diverse communities within our communities and across communities. But we have challenges too. We're fighting against disinformation, the role of social media. That also plays out in the Chinese language media, where there is a tremendous amount of bigotry and disinformation happening there. So it's not without challenges, but we do have a history of coming together because we have to. We don't have a choice. Our organization that formed over 50 years ago was inspired by the Black Civil Rights Movement. And the work that we're doing today around advancing immigrant rights, it's in our DNA to do that work, again, because we need to, and also because it strengthens us. Julian, you could probably appreciate this notion of, it was called the civil rights struggle for a reason. We had to struggle and push each other to make sure that no one was left behind, that whatever we advance doesn't cause further harm to other communities inadvertently. And that work takes us listening to each other, talking to each other, and at times struggling around the principles that we share.
For everybody in this country and many people around the world, this last year has been unprecedented. It's been stressful. It's been difficult for a lot of people, health-wise, economically, in our country. On top of that, for too many people in the AAPI community, it's been layered over with all of this hate and scapegoating. But it looks like we're going to come out of this pandemic. And there's been a lot of talk about that we can't go back to the status quo, that we have to be better than we were before. What are you hopeful for in terms of the years ahead?
We are going to get out of this. We're going to come out of this with a better understanding that these issues that we're facing are structural. The disproportionate death rates, the housing crisis that we're facing, those who are in the midst of a food insecurity crisis, the economic disparities. And the silver lining for me in all of this is we are having a racial reckoning that's looking at every single institution. And it's going to be really important that we be insistent and vigilant that when we come out of this, that there's a rededication to reviewing what we need to do, working with across communities, and making sure that we don't lose sight of that fact. In times of crisis, there's a quick rush to deploy quick fixes. But then when the headlines go away and our memories fade, it's the same repeat of having to fight for those resources. That needs to be a long-term investment, and it's not going to be fixed overnight. That's what I'm hopeful for, that out of this crisis, we'll come together around the real hard work that's going to be necessary moving forward.
Well, I want to thank you for your work, for being a part of that push to break down structural racism, and for the hope that your work gives us. Thanks a lot, Cynthia.
Julian, it was really my pleasure to talk with you, and thank you for your thoughtful questions. And I really do see you as part of our movement. So thank you so much for your leadership.
After almost a year of living in a pandemic, the veil has been lifted on just how deep our country's racial injustices still go. As a country, we've had to grapple with this idea that words matter, and that they can too often and too easily encourage stigma and violence against innocent people. With a new administration in power, a renewed hope for progress has emerged. In his first week in office, President Biden condemned racist rhetoric. Activists are pushing for increased training and reporting on hate crimes. Volunteers in the Bay Area are stepping up to keep their streets safe and escort the elderly to buy groceries. And Oakland will soon create a special unit for responding to crimes directed toward Asian Americans. Like Cynthia mentioned, we need more efforts like Stop AAPI Hate at the forefront of our country's racial reckoning to collectively ensure that ignorance and fear don't continue to breed hatred and xenophobia. Next time, we'll answer a question on the minds of a lot of Americans. How could we reimagine public safety? We'll talk to Colorado State Representative Leslie Herod about the newly launched STAR program that reworks law enforcement's response to mental health crises.
This is really about making sure the community is engaged and we have a community response to mental health and substance misuse. But it does have to be integrated. You know, we do need to make sure that it's tied into 911, that it is a truly community response, and that people have somewhere to go for treatment too. You know, that is so important.
Our America is a Lemonada original. This episode was produced by Julia York. Matthew Simonson is our editor. Jackie Danziger is our supervising producer. Music is by Hannes Brown. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittleswax, Jessica Cordova Kramer, and Julian Castro. Help others find our show by leaving us a rating and writing a review. Follow us at Lemonada Media across all social platforms, or find me on Twitter at Julian Castro, or on Instagram at Julian Castro TX.
Lemonada. Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people, and we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.